I think that it's possible that the su Republican support for Ernst was softer than they would like. She bumped up against Donald Trump over his nomination of Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense. It was pretty clear that she didn't care much for Hegseth and that choice. And she kind of got pressured from the right, and there were actually primary threats against her at that time before she, after she said, that she was not automatically going to vote for him and she's going to take her time to look at it and vet him. And the time that she then finally came out and said she was going to vote for him, that there was a lot of pressure on her from the right. So yeah, again, that, it wasn't impossible to imagine that there would be a MAGA candidate going up against her in the primary.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm delighted to have as my guest today Kathy Obradovich. A lot of our listeners are very familiar with Kathy, who worked at the Quad City Times going back in her career. She's now the editor-in-chief with the Iowa Capital Dispatch, and of course, in between, she served with the Des Moines Register. She's got over 30 years of experience reporting on Iowa politics and government. That's why I reached out to her, because I wanted to take a look back at 2025. What are the top stories we had? There's a lot to choose from anymore in politics and government. So I'm looking forward to what Kathy thinks. Kathy, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thanks so much for having me. And here's a little trivia for you. My husband, Jim Obradovich, is actually an alum of WBIK. He
I didn't
worked,
know
he's
that.
an Augustana grad and worked there when he was in college. So definitely love WBIK. Love the opportunity to talk to your listeners. So thank you so much.
And I've got to share too, Kathy was my very first guest as a radio host back when I was at Burlington with KBUR back in 2014. So, gosh, it doesn't seem that long ago. But I always appreciate your willingness to take the time and share your thoughts on these very important matters with our listeners. So it's great to have you back. It's been a tumultuous year in the United States, but our focus is on Iowa. Let's just start with what you saw, Kathy, is the top political story in Iowa in 2025.
Yeah, so I have to start with number one because it's going to reverberate now into the new year is sort of the twin peaks of Iowa politics. Governor Kim Reynolds and Senator Joni Ernst deciding not to run for re-election. And I think in both cases, it surprised a lot of people, particularly the governor's decision not to run. I mean, early on in 2024, there was maybe some indications that she might not run, including her decision to stick her neck out and endorse Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in the caucuses. I thought that was an indication actually back then that she might not run. But then, going forward, she had given every indication that she was planning to be on the ballot and then just abruptly stepped out. So that set up a whole, domino effect of now we've got a sitting congressman, Randy Feenstra from the 4th District, who, by most accounts is leading his primary, although it's a big primary field, both for governor and to replace him. So he there that sets off an open race in the 4th District, which is super crowded. And then going forward now, and we've got Rob Sand on the Democrat side, who does have a primary, but broadly favored to win that primary. And he's, of course, the only Democrat is currently serving in statewide office in Iowa right now. So, I mean, most people are looking at the race to run against Rob Sand here in 2026. Meanwhile, Senator Joni Ernst stepped back, surprised everybody, and she, or surprised most people, I think. And she, you know, her race now also is opening up another congressional seat in Iowa with Ashley Hinson running for the Republican nomination, leaving her seat open. And that, and meanwhile, Iowa already has two other competitive congressional district races in the first and third with Marionette Miller Meeks, who has run her races for re-election by the skin of her teeth, practically every cycle, and Zach Nunn in the third, where that district is historically a swing district. It's certainly not it's more Republican than it used to be, but it is still, I think with Polk County being the main population center, it's still a swing district. So meanwhile, you look at the primary ballots now, up and down at the top of the ticket, there's at least six candidates running in every primary race, and some have as many as 10. So voters are going to have their work cut out for them, frankly, to even figure out who they're going to vote for in these primary elections, just to figure out who we're going to have for our choices in November of 26.
Did you get a sense, and I agree with you, the Reynolds decision came kind of as a surprise, but did you have a sense that because of her endorsement of DeSantis over Trump, that she was wary of a primary challenge? I mean, to be honest, and looking what happens, that people that cross Trump, they don't have a very good longevity politically. Was that have you picked up anything that was a major factor? Or was she just ready, decided it's time to go?
I think it's the latter, frankly. I think that had she decided to run again, that that a Trump endorsement would be a concern, but only if she had a viable challenger in the primary. And frankly, I think if she had stayed on the ballot, she wasn't going to have any hugely significant primary opposition. I think that you looking forward into where politics have gone, et cetera. Plus, her husband Kevin had a cancer scare. That tends to change people's priorities. I think she has not said publicly, beyond just wanting to spend more time with her, family, which is, kind of a boilerplate thing politicians say when they step away. In her case, very well could be the case, and certainly that's got to be at least part of it. But I also think that it's, looking forward, that probably looking at the political climate, maybe she had just decided she had enough.
The interesting thing about that Senate race, of course, Ernst had served two terms and had made some controversial statements in a town meeting that got a lot of national attention. There seemed to be a feeling that the Democrats' chances might have been better against her than against Ashley Hinson. Is that something you picked up as well?
Well, I think that it's possible that the Republican support for Ernst was softer than they would like. She bumped up against Donald Trump over his nomination of Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense. It was pretty clear that she didn't care much for Hegseth and that choice. And she kind of got pressured from the right. And there were actually primary threats against her at that time before she, after she said, that she was not automatically going to vote for him and she's going to take her time to look at it and vet him. And the time that she then finally came out and said she was going to vote for him, that there was a lot of pressure on her from the right. So, again, that It wasn't impossible to imagine that there would be a MAGA candidate going up against her in the primary. And again, too, I mean, I think that there was starting to be, kind of articles attacking her character and, stuff like that. So she definitely had a target on her back. And again, I don't think she has said, one way or another why she chose now to drop out. It's interesting. When she ran in 2014 after Harkin retired, people I thought that Grassley was going to retire, and Harkin, and I think Grassley said this publicly, that Harkin basically beat him to the punch, announced he was going to retire, and then that left Grassley not wanting to leave, and he said this, he didn't want to leave Iowa with no seniority. So he stayed in, stayed in past Ernst's freshman term, and she won re-election, started to gather some seniority, and now she's hitting the exit before Chuck Grassley. So I think it's interesting because he's got I think he'll serve till he dies, frankly. But unless he's found the fountain of youth, he that won't be forever. And ultimately, we end up in the same place with Iowa not having any seniority in the Senate.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great point you bring up because Grassley would be back up for re-election, or who knows? He hasn't said what he's going to do yet. And yeah, that his past comments make certainly enter into this a little bit as far as what his intentions might be. We're talking about elections this year, and of course, as you know, in the Trump era, Iowa was gone from being a purple state that voted for Barack Obama twice, to being pretty red state. They control all offices of state government except for one, and both Senate seats, all the congressional delegation, and of course both houses of the legislature. Are you seeing evidence, or are you hearing that the Democrats have a real shot at winning statewide? Something, again, that they haven't been able to do at one of the major offices for quite a while.
So, I mean, the one real bright point I would point to for Democrats is that there have been three legislative special elections here in the past year, and Democrats have won all three, including flipping the Senate seat that had been occupied by Chris Kenoyer, who, of course, resigned to become lieutenant governor. So flipping that seat in eastern Iowa is a big deal for Democrats. We just had on December 30 a special election that Democrats won. They that was keeping a seat, but that was significant because it keeps the Senate Republicans from having a super majority in 2026, which of course then affects how it mostly affects voting for the governor's appointees, right? So you have to have a two-thirds majority to confirm governor's appointees. And by denying a supermajority to Republicans, that means there's probably going to be some room for Democrats to bargain for some of the things that they want. So that is it is significant. Now, to extrapolate three state Senate special elections to a statewide race is, pretty rough, right? But it's I would say kind of a psychological boost for Democrats. It's a momentum starter, at least for 2026. It helps people to think, all is not hopeless for Democrats, which is a, at least having some optimism is a good start for them. It's certainly, they have a really long way to go. And, They start this year with a big voter registration deficit, which they're going to have to try to correct before November. I think the primaries will help, having contested, interesting primaries, help people, at least have to register for a party, because Iowa has closed primaries. You have to be registered for one party or another to vote in their primary. So that will help. But I think that Democrats have a lift in terms of getting people A, registered, and B, registered as Democrats.
Listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Kathy Obradovich, who Kathy and I go way back. As I explained, she was the very first guest I had when I started my career in radio. She's the editor-in-chief at the Iowa Capital Dispatch and, of course, was known for many years at the Des Moines Register and also at the Quad City Times here locally. And I just found out her husband worked for WVIK, so there's all kinds of connections here. We've been talking about the top story, political story from Iowa in 2025, which Kathy said was the surprising announcements of Kim Reynolds and Joni Ernst that they wouldn't be seeking re-election. Before we get to some other big issues, I wanted to ask. And this may be one of them that you had, we're going to mention, but President Trump really did well in Iowa. Remember, his margin was greater in Texas than it was in Iowa than it was in Texas when he first ran. He got really a lot of support here. It was a place of strength. Have you seen, in light of a lot of the actions he's taken in this first year of his second term, particularly on tariffs, any diminution in that support, or is he still pretty strong?
There hasn't been a lot of polling in Iowa. Political polling has been fraught here, and you may recall that President Trump is actually suing, continuing to sue the Des Moines Register over one of its pre-election polls. And so, it's really what we know is anecdotal. And so anecdotally, I would say there's a lot of concern in farm country about some of the Trump administration policies and how it's affecting farmers, including the tariffs, which of course affect international markets for Iowa commodities, especially soybean. And concern about health care. So, there's a lot of farmers, they're self-employed, right? And unless a spouse has a job with benefits off the farm, there's a lot of farmers who are on the Affordable Health Care Act exchanges, and those premiums, because they did not renew those tax credits, the subsidies for that, those premiums are soaring out of control. In fact, I was telling somebody the other day, it feels like the situation before Obamacare was approved, back, 20 and 20, the late 20 teens, when people were talking about their healthcare premiums soaring. And it's not, folks who have insurance through their employers are not immune from this, because as you cut Medicaid, which happened with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and now you're cutting these Affordable Care Act subsidies, people who have insurance through their employers are also seeing their premiums rise. The cost of healthcare continues to rise, and those premiums are rising. And cutting Medicaid and cutting access to the Affordable Care Act subsidies, if it drives people off insurance, if it drives people into the emergency rooms for healthcare, that exacerbates the increased cost for healthcare for everybody else. So I think we're building up now to kind of a head of steam where that issue starts to emerge as a major, major issue in 2026, just like Obamacare was, in previous cycles.
That's a great point. I saw it was I think a Wall Street Journal article, a news story that talked about who who are the people that are on Obamacare on these exchanges? And I think it was half are small business people, of which obviously farmers are one. And I think the public perception is, if you're getting subsidies of government programs, it's people like on Medicaid, the poor and all. But this isn't, this is a different subset of people that are, again, a large number of small business owners, as you suggested. So that might create different dynamics as far as public pressure on where this ends up.
Well, and also a lot of working people who, for whatever reason, their jobs don't offer insurance. I've got a niece who works full time, but she started off working a couple different part-time jobs, and she has diabetes and she has to have health insurance. So she went on the Affordable Care Act, and it after she turned 26, which, the Obamacare let people stay on their parents' insurance till they're 26. She, once she got off, was no longer eligible for that. She had to have insurance, and this was a way to do it.
So the number one story, as you mentioned, was Governor Reynolds, Senator Durst, announcing they weren't going to seek re-election, and obviously that had a lot of cascading impacts down ballot. Were there other big stories from the past year that you wanted to add as well?
Yeah, I mean, beyond healthcare, I would say things that are still resonating from 2025 and previous years into the election year. One is eminent domain. So this is the carbon pipeline issue, which has now been going on for several years. And what's interesting about that politically is that it really cuts across party lines. So you've got we had in 2025 a group of Republican senators who actually prolonged the legislative session because they said we were not going to vote on budget bills until we get a vote on an eminent domain bill. And by eminent domain, most people in Iowa know what this is by now, but it means that for public projects that are supposed to be in the public interest, that you can force an unwilling property owner to accept an easement on their property at a price that's set by the county commission. So what the summit carbon pipeline has been doing is trying to sign up as many property owners as they can to get easements across their property for this pipeline and get it voluntarily. But there's a pretty hardcore of folks out there that don't want it on their land. They don't think it's safe. They don't, feel, and they're angry about the idea that they could be forced to have it. And they don't believe that this pipeline is in the public interest. It's for wealthy investors and the ethanol industry, and so they just don't believe it's in the public interest, and so that property rights issue has been simmering and bubbling through the legislature. It's still going, and with South Dakota now banning eminent domain for these carbon pipelines, that debate in Iowa is shifting as well. So I think it's going to be a really interesting issue to watch, and I think it still has, despite how long it's been going on, still has the power to affect elections here in 2026 and public policy.
Are you seeing any more evidence of what's called greenlash, the phenomenon? I saw some stories about it in Southeast Iowa where people were showing up to town hall meetings starting to object to these big solar farms and wind farms taking property and using the electricity to send to urban areas. I thought that might rise up a little more, but I'm not sure it has. But is it something that's on your radar as what might be something significant for the future?
Yeah, I think just the wind versus solar issue continues to simmer out there. I mean, most of those projects are, they're voluntary easements. Like the landowners are getting paid to have these wind turbines on their property. So so I do think, that's less of a property rights issue than what we've seen. And you know, Iowa State University, for example, is doing research on, for example, how you can farm around solar panels. You know, so I think that, you know, I think I don't see that as being as big a deal. What I do see emerging here, and we've already had some news on it here in the first week of 2026, is nuclear energy. So Governor Reynolds last year, in the condition of the state message, said, you know, she assigned a nuclear energy task force. She just announced this week who those people are going to be on that task force. And you've got a company called NextEra that is looking to refurbish and relaunch the Duane Arnold nuclear power plant. It's the only one in Iowa, and that's in the Cedar Rapids area. And that issue also cuts across party lines. You've got concerns about nuclear energy and, you know, how, you know, whether it's safe and, you know, what do you do with the nuclear waste and all that kind of stuff. But you've also got Democrats in the Linn County area who are looking at all those good jobs, you know, well-paying jobs for the community. And, you know, also then, you know, a way to power those data centers that are popping up all over the place. So I do think that that will be an interesting issue going forward. Probably, you know, the wind energy is so established in Iowa that I don't see anybody really making headway in trying to erode that at this point. Solar energy faces that competition, and I think that's still an argument to have. I'm not seeing a whole lot of that coming through the legislature at this point.
We've just got time, a couple minutes here for a final question. Just turning to 2026, obviously the elections are going to be the big issue. Anything else? You talked about the eminent domain issue. Anything else for our listeners to keep an eye on for the coming year?
Yeah, so property taxes will be one of the biggest issues in the legislative session this year. The governor has said that this will be a priority. Legislative leaders have said it's a priority. They started on a bill last year in the House and Senate. The governor didn't weigh in at that point with her own plan. But property taxes is, you know, it's a bipartisan issue. It's hugely, you know, people are really strongly interested in it. But they face some really difficult headwaters in order to get something done this year. It's an election year. The state does not have a lot of money to put in, you know, to backfill things that are currently being paid for with property taxes, which makes it more difficult because then you're telling local governments that, you know, these are things that you just have to stop doing, or you're not going to have the money to do the things that your constituents in local cities want. So that is really difficult. You got a lame duck governor. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what it is that they're actually able to do about property taxes. Clearly an enormous priority, and they've set up the expectation that they're going to do something. We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year, and Iowa's going to be back, I think, in the center of the political universe with these elections. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting year. I want to thank you again, Kathy Obradovich, which has been my guest today. She's the editor-in-chief at the Iowa Capital Dispatch. I'd asked her kind of prepare what the biggest stories were for last year and what to look forward for this year, and it was a very interesting conversation. Thank you so much, Kathy.
Thanks, Robin. It's always a pleasure.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.